Hey, 3D MJers, this is Andrea Valdez, and you're listening to the 3D Muscle Journey podcast. Today, I'm joined by Alberto Nunez and Eric Helms, and we're going to try to talk you out of competitive bodybuilding. And if you're a coach, we're going to try to talk you out of letting all your athletes compete. This is a topic we revisit from a slightly different angle every year or two, and this time it's from a lens of recent revelations. Alberto says that one of the most frequent challenges he faces as a coach is when new athletes underestimate the difficulty and negative consequences that come with prep dieting. It's a battle he's constantly fighting, and one that seems to progress as the internet continues to make everything look more glamorous and positive than it really is. Eric is now about a year out from his most recent contest prep season, where he got the leanest he's ever been, and now he can look back on it and share with you the lessons from it in contrast to his first seasons about a decade ago. And while I'm about 7 years removed from my last contest prep, it's only been about 3 or 4 years since I feel like I've healed and can truly reflect on what bodybuilding has done to me and for me in my athletic career. It's a cautionary conversation, but also a great primer for those who will hear this and decide that competitive bodybuilding truly is for them, and hopefully will help them have a smoother introduction to the sport. As always, if you have any feedback or comments on this particular episode, go to 3dmusclejourney.com or our YouTube channel at youtube.com/team3dmj and leave it under podcast number 166. Let's get into it. Here is Why You Shouldn't Prep with Eric Helms and Alberto Nunez.
Okay, so we're here, guys, because to talk to all you new folks out there who are considering getting a little taste of the sport, why you should do it, what maybe you should reconsider, and just kind of go over some of the small print. Like, bodybuilding's been one of, for me personally, one of the greatest things I've done with myself. But at the same time, there's many things that I had no idea I was signing up for as I was turning in. I think we mailed in our show stuff back in the day. Yeah, I think this came to me because, you know, around gyms around here, I'm kind of known as the guy that competes, and way too often I'll have people come to me with like just this big smiley face, and they're like, "Yo, Bert, I'm going to do it." And I'm like, "Oh man,
please don't.
But at the same time, it's like I try not to show in my face, but I wish I could just sit them down and have them go over all the things that they must consider, all the things they should be wary of, because no one told us this stuff. And I think between our experiences here and those we've had with our athletes, hopefully we can shed some light when it comes to, you know, the less glamorous, still worthwhile at times, but less glamorous and hit you by surprise things that a contest prep has waiting for you. Mm.
No, I think I like the way you said that, Berto. And I think it's something that our perspectives have shifted on, like, I think multiple times. One of the reasons I'm really glad that Andrea is on this podcast with us is because I would say she came around at a point in our careers where maybe we were starting to get a little bit of amnesia. And, you know, like, I remember our presentation in 2016 in one of the first overseas trips we've all done together, which was pretty cool. We were over at JPS Health and Fitness, and we had the 3DMJ Down Under. And her presentation was basically like, here's all the stuff about bodybuilding that can really mess you up. And I remember all of us being like, I'm uncomfortable with this. I think I'm mostly uncomfortable with this because I completely agree, but I haven't brought up this in a while. And am I responsible to coach these people, et cetera, et cetera. And that was also, for me, so I'll speak personally, kind of a paradigm shift in figuring out and coalescing what my aims as a researcher are. So, you know, I describe myself as a sports scientist, not a nutrition or exercise scientist, because I'm specifically trying to help people understand bodybuilding. And I am absolutely someone who promotes bodybuilding. So if I'm going to promote bodybuilding, that means I have to promote all of bodybuilding, not just the positive experiences I got from it, like developing self-discipline or resilience, or it leading to me having a career with you guys, all that stuff. Because there are plenty of people, and some of them I've coached, who, I'm not going to put words in their mouth, but I suspect they might have an overall net negative experience from bodybuilding. And the right decision for them was to go sweet, learn from that. I'm not about that life, or that is not the way that's not something that's created positivity for me overall. Maybe they got some good lessons from it. Just like you learn about, you know, how not to do something from making mistakes, but they might still classify it as a mistake, you know? And I think that can happen for a lot of people. And I think that the only responsible way for us to promote bodybuilding is to do it in that holistic way. And that's what I've found as my role as a science communicator and promoter of bodybuilding, is I have to be brutally honest about it, which I absolutely credit Andrea for kind of giving me that perspective on and shifting my attention a bit.
I'm so glad y'all feel that way, because I felt terrible after that. After that presentation, I was like, oh, I messed up. They don't agree. But I think I didn't think of that as a catalyst or anything. I think maybe at the time y'all have said that to me, but more like that, almost everything I make comes out of what I've dealt with. And I think at that time, I had just moved on from any physique goals to strictly performance. I was maybe about 6 months to a year in, and I was having the time of my life. And I think I had just like come out the other side of 5 years of chronic dieting and worrying about how I looked all the time. And I felt so free, y'all. And going backwards, you know, I was like, oh, that was bad. Like that was not my happiest self. And I think it's important that we talk about that. I don't know. It just felt really important to be like, this is why it was so bad. And also now that it's far enough away that I can see it, I did feel like very much it was my like duty. Like I have to tell y'all how crazy this was. And I'm glad I did it and all that stuff. But the more I got into on with you guys and as a coach, I realized, I think that my story wasn't all that uncommon either. And it's hard, right? When your business is, I coach people doing this thing. In most other cases, every other coach is like, so you should do it. And this is like the one thing where I'm like, hey, we coach this thing, but you probably shouldn't do it. So I don't know. It felt important.
You guys know it's wild.
Tell me what's wild.
So like we often blame bad experiences on like bro science. Would you guys agree? Like, oh, that happened because you did it that way. Like that was old school. Like, and you know, absolutely having like an elimination based diet, dieting for 12 weeks, you know, like cutting water on a daily basis, doing all this extra dangerous stuff, all the extracurricular downsides make bodybuilding a lot worse. Don't get me wrong. But like if you were to play golf and you took a bro science approach, you just wouldn't be as good of a golfer. You know, like yeah, you wouldn't end up with an eating disorder and alienate your family or anything like that. You know what I'm saying? So I think it tells you something if you think about that parallel with other sports, that with bodybuilding, you're almost like in our view, like if you were to ask people in the evidence-based community, hey, if you did it all wrong, what are the chances that you might have, you know, at least a period of having disordered eating or a negative body image or just an unhealthy relationship with food and family and stuff like that. And they'd be like, oh, like 90%, like at least temporarily, you know, you'd have such a restrictive diet that you wouldn't be able to hang out with friends and family. You'd have, you know, you'd have a huge calorie deficit and you'd have very least gained a bunch of weight back and feel bad about it. You know, that's like best case scenario. You know, you kind of be a hermit for 12 weeks and then you overshoot your starting contest prep weight. You know, that's best case. So how do we view a sport where you have to find a experienced, evidence-based, you know, humanist coach to take you through the process to not have a bad experience and not go, oh shit, maybe this is kind of, we're playing with fire here and we just need someone who knows how to manage it, you know?
Yeah, you know, so a lot of the people who I think are not candidates for it, they come to me and they're super excited about what they're about to do. This is why what you just said hits home, because, you know, I think a few years back, I would have, you know, when someone had a shitty experience, it's like, God, you just did it the wrong way, man. We got these mm-hmm. macros you hit, and like we got the hacks, man. But now it's more like, I couldn't save you from this being what I think it's going to be. The only right thing the only thing I could do for you is tell you, no, you shouldn't do this. Let's work on things that are in a way prerequisites for finally getting on that track. And then maybe we can talk about it. But it was, yeah, that it wasn't that way before. And man, it's like, I go back to how I handled all my athletes, like just say 8-10 years ago. I mean, we were cutting edge, so don't get me wrong, but nevertheless, the way we do things now is so, so different. So, so sometimes like we spend a lot of our time convincing people like, no, like you shouldn't do this. I'd say about half my athletes, I'm like, you know what, that timeline you got, like, let's kind of reconfigure that a little bit. That's what I end up having to do with about half of the athletes that inquire about contest prep services.
Yeah. And what sucks too is like, even if we do, like how you said, we're so much better now, but like even at our best, there's still a possibility it might not be a good experience, you know? And even if that is like, I got on with Bert, I thought I was going to compete in 6 months. He talked me into doing it the next year. And then somewhere along the line, they realize like, oh, I don't even have it in me to do like the diet before the prep. And then there's like a loss of confidence and a loss of self-esteem. Like, you know, that sucks. It is, I know it sounds weird, but it's better you find out that way than go, you know, 4 months into a prep. But there's no guarantees that it will be a positive experience even with, or not even that it's positive, that it won't be a negative experience even with the best coaching or whatever, because it does, you know, take like 24 hours of your life. If you think about it, like, you know, everything affects it because it is your literal body. So, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think the main thing is, are you ready for that hit? You know, yeah. will you not break all the way? Cause you're going to break a little that first prep. Yeah. It's, I go back to, you know, I guess my first prep that really worked, and you're almost existing in this world. It's like, that's not how the world actually is. It's, you know, like you really barricade yourself and you live in this bubble for a while. So it has a, it's again, you, it's one of those things you have to do. There's some benefits to living in that bubble when I look back, but at the same time, oh, that you know, that solitary confinement that you put yourself in, like, yeah, it leaves some dents, and most people just honestly aren't ready for that.
Yeah.
And there's other ways to get the upsides too. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
When people are like, oh, but I'm so interested in the challenge, you know, I think we were talking about this off air, Berto, and you were like, look, this isn't running a marathon, you know, like if you want to clock your 26 and you sprain your ankle halfway through, you can walk, but people, like, everyone respects just completing a marathon, you know? Like, if you, like, I can't walk 26 miles in a day. I'd have issues, you know? But getting on stage, like, nobody wants to get on stage in their Speedo or their posing suit having walked the last leg, if you get my comparison, right? You don't want to be that guy or gal who gets turned into a meme, you know? Like, you know? Like, didn't lift, didn't diet, showed up and competed, you know, like that's not what you want to be. Cause it's, there's no hiding. It's not a, you know, 6,000 people did the local marathon and it's just great that everyone's active. This is super positive. It's not about winning. That is a fantastic thing, right? I love that. And I think that's a great way for people to get into fitness and find motivated goals through structure, community involvement. and then being able to tailor the amount of effort and the amount of punishment you can put your body through based on where you're at. That's great, right? But bodybuilding is not that. So if you're thinking you can get those things, why not try something else? Why not do powerlifting? You know, why not do CrossFit? Why not run a marathon? Well, besides the fact that running is bad, you know, I would say go for it. So,
yeah, it is an unfortunate, it might upset my fellow ladies, but usually at least you find that, you know, males enjoy lifting and, you know, then they're at golds long enough and they meet the Birdo there that is the competitor and he's like, shit, maybe I could be that guy. But unfortunately, I want to say, I don't want to give a number. A lot of the times when I had female athletes come to me, it was they didn't actually enjoy lifting. They were just really excited to have a beach body. And competing in bodybuilding was a way to do that. And damn it if that's not the most common and I want to say one of the least positive things to come out of the less intense divisions is that when you, it almost makes it seem like everyone could do it. And, and no, they shouldn't. That's all. Help me make that sound nicer. You should get
in shape a few times, like for your own self, like outside of like that deadline, you know, you should get to the point where, you know, you've gone back and forth. You're okay with weight gain. I think that's huge. You know, like you've gotten to the point where you appreciate that part. And then, you know, you're able to get yourself supercut for a casual supercut for the summer. I think, yeah, you need to bounce back and forth between that before you're like, okay, now I think I want to go for that next thing. Yeah. Because it's very unfortunate when that's your first time, like you've ever been in good shape. And that's the only thing like you have. I guess you can compare that to, and it's like I'm either doing that and I'm doing great, or I'm just kind of here idle and like miserable.
And what does that say that you need to sign up for a competition to, in order to like make yourself do something? It doesn't have to be the stage or the deadline or the, you know, intense dieting and all that stuff.
Now I get what you're saying, Andrew. Like the there's a lot of things that people do in the fitness space to work towards making a lifestyle habit out of being active. You know, like all the little strategies you hear about developing habits. Like, hey, if you tell your friends you're going to do it, then you'll have that social currency. You'll have made it real and you're more likely to do it. If you have a partner train with you at the gym, you're more likely to show up. If you sign up for that half marathon and you post it on your Facebook, you'd have to actually tell everyone you're not going to be doing. So everyone's like, hey, when's your half marathon? Can I go? I want to support you. And a lot of people will use structured goals. You know, we get taught SMART goals as trainers, which, you know, like specific, time measured, all that stuff is great. But that's very, very outcome and external focused. It does galvanize someone into action. They will take steps and they will accomplish that goal. But if we're actually into like, I want you to have a physically active, long-term relationship with movement and health. It needs to be more than that, is what you're saying. So I'm all for the people, like there's people who do like the whole like fitness trips. Like, hey, I want to go and go to a yoga camp out here. And then I want to go all, the next year my challenge is going to be I'll run a half marathon. And then next year I'm going to do a CrossFit competition. And the next year I want to do a bodybuilding competition. And I think that's what we're talking about. It shouldn't be seen in that category, in my opinion.
Yes.
I get why people will like, I want to set up a goal and knock it down. Like this is on my fitness bucket list, if you will. But I would put forth that there is the special benefits of bodybuilding come at a very high cost of what you learn to do that. And I often use the analogy of it's kind of like Icarus. So Icarus is basically a moth to flame when it comes to him wanting to fly up and see the sun. Loves the sun, but the sun burns him and he comes crashing down to the earth. And I think that's very much for true people, for true physique athletes who love bodybuilding, not just the outcome of it and the way they get to look, but also the process of doing that. You know, it's as cliche as it is to quote Pumping Iron, you know, Arnold talks about how like sculptors do their thing, but bodybuilders, like, they try to put on different proportionate amounts of muscle. Like, I get just as excited about what I might look like as the process of doing it. The idea of sculpting my physique over multiple years and then taking it all off to see that sculpture and trying to keep it the way it is and having a vision in my mind. Before I even get on stage, I am excited. I'm all about it. I love it. So I think that kind of desire will get someone on stage if they have that interest, relationship, appreciation for the art of bodybuilding and also like have a competitive drive. That convergence of personality factors will be drawn to bodybuilding and then be enhanced by it potentially if they do things right. But there are, like I said, it comes at a very high cost, and you need to actually, don't just fly up to the sun because you heard it's cool. You need to actually be Icarus. Like, you want to have, like, I know it's going to burn me. I know I'm going to crash to the earth, but I'm going to dust my wings off and I'm going to do it again. That needs to be the mentality. And I do think what you're both describing is a lot of people who see it as, that would be a cool thing to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's
or
almost
this
like...
will fix my unhappiness with myself.
Yes.
That's the one that scares me the most.
Well, doesn't help that social media portrays it that way. It's like, take anyone right now who's shredded. Like, if you were to hang out with them for like 5 days in real life, you'd be like, damn, you suck, bro. Like, this is nothing like the photo shoot you posted up the other day.
You talked a lot about the cranberries in your salad for like 25 minutes, man. You know, like...
The newest version of 3DMJ's lifting library is about to launch in 12 days, and we wanted to give you a quick heads up on what is included and why you should purchase it as soon as possible to save as much money as possible. For those who aren't already familiar with it, the lifting library is our all-in-one video course solution to perfecting the essential movements and exercises that every bodybuilder needs to know and execute well. We released the third version of it back in November 2019, and intended to get version 4 out to you guys much earlier this year, but as you can probably guess, the pandemic kind of put a giant delay on filming, so we had to make some adjustments, and finally it's coming to you now. The lifting library already includes 25 chapters where we cover bench press, deadlift, back and front squats, hip thrust, overhead press, lat pulldowns, lat pullovers, RDLs, calf raises, lateral raises, horizontal rows, and a lot more. Each of those movements has a super detailed instructional video with multiple angles, freeze frames with graphics, and educational voiceovers by our Chief Science Officer, Eric Helms. Each exercise also has a text-based supplemental section that outlines those key performance takeaways, and most importantly, a programming consideration section where you learn why, when, and how to insert each exercise into a full training program. All of that is already included in version 3, and it's on sale right now for only $50. And in version 4, that's launching on December 15th, we will be adding incline pressing, bicep curl variations, and instructional chapters on BFR, warming up, and how to build a training program. At that time, the price of the library access will increase to $63 as well. So to save some money and get your lifetime updates early before the price bump, go to liftinglibrary.com now, pay $50 now, and you have access forever. Again, go to liftinglibrary.com to sign up, get access, or you can even enroll in the free trial where you can explore 4 of the chapters without entering any payment info to see what it's all about before you buy. Again, liftinglibrary.com. Thanks so much for listening and enjoy the rest of the show.
Yeah, you know, it's like I think other sports just kind of have these proper steps and procedures, and they standardize things, you know, in regards to like where you should be. It's like you know, like if you know, you took a boxing class and you're like, oh, this is great cardio and I'm learning some cool things, it would not make sense for you like in 4 months. It's like, okay, we're going to throw you in the ring with some other dude. But with boxing, it's so obvious, right? Or mixed martial arts or whatever. It's like, you look at boxing, it's like, all right, first you're going to have headgear, and you'll be very, like, it's going to be like 2 rounds and it'll be super supervised and this guy sucks too. and it's like gradual, but like with like physique athletes and you know, like, especially if sometimes if you have a very effective coach, it can get you like in tremendous shape, like your first go around, it's like, man, that's probably like the worst thing for you. Like you don't realize it, but that's like, you just got in there with a very experienced boxer, no gear, and y'all went the full 12 rounds, and now you're pretty like, you're pretty fucked up, man. You know? Yeah.
To keep with the boxing analogy, so you assume some risks when you do boxing. Like, let's say you do go through that process and you hire a boxing coach 2 years out and you do it right and you've got a match in 2 years and you go do like a local amateur fight. You might get a concussion. You might get a broken nose. You might get a really serious injury or something like that. But that is a low probability, right? That's not supposed to happen. It can happen in the course of getting knocked down 3 times or knocked out. But you also might win, right? You might find out you're a good boxer.
And those things heal for the most part, usually. Like it happens in 1 second and then it only gets better from there. Versus, go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, so you can't guarantee a win. And, you know, the most likely outcome for a boxer is, for especially a first timer, is maybe you don't win and you get like, you know, a black eye. That's probably like something in that equivalent isn't the largest distribution of potential outcomes probabilistically. For a bodybuilder, you're probably not going to win as well. But the only thing I can guarantee is that some point 8 weeks after your show, you're going to be wondering why you can't stop eating pie. That's kind of like I guarantee if you lose 10 to 15% of your body weight, that you will regain 10 to 20% of your body weight within about half the time you took it off. That's the only guarantee I know if someone says, I'm going to do a bodybuilding show for the first time.
And it's not more. The pie that's the worst part. It's the way you feel about yourself.
Yeah, eating pie is fine. It's the fact that you ate pie until you wanted to throw up and you hated yourself and you feel like, I was so disciplined and now I don't even deserve to call myself a bodybuilder. Yeah.
And it's so many little things that they're just not obvious. It's like you're going to lose a little of your hard-earned muscle. Like that's just going to happen. Guess what? Your hormones? Hormones are freaking powerful things. Those are going to be so messed up. You have no idea what you're in for. It's a combination of like little hidden small print that it's like, yeah, so-and-so looks fantastic on their Instagram, but also they're most likely going through this or they, you know, they have gone through it in the past. And obviously this person decided this was for them. This might not even be for you. Like you might be able to get 90% of that without like all those other things that come with it. It's just, bodybuilding is so deceptive in regards to how it wears you down. I mean, you get knocked out, it's so easy. It's so obvious. It's like, yeah, that's it. The ref's like, you're done.
The ongoing yo-yo of that whole thing. It's that
you get to where Eric says,
and then you're like, I need to fix this. And then you're like, no, it's fine. I just care about getting bigger. And then you look in the mirror and you're like, fuck, no, I really need to fix it. And it's like this whole thing every few months that I know I had an issue with. Where I'm like, mentally, okay, it's off season. I need to gain weight. And I'm like, but I think I look like shit because 6 months ago I didn't look like this. And like, I don't even look like I lift. And like, how am I supposed to put something on Instagram now? Because I'm on Instagram as a figure athlete. And so like, who am I? I do need to diet. And then I have a call with Birdo and he's like, nah, come on. We know what we're doing here. I'm like, yeah, you're right. You're right. And then I look in the mirror or I take an Instagram photo. And I'm like, oh my God, who is this? What is happening? And it's, you know, it keeps going till you, unfortunately, for most people, look how you don't want to look for a long amount of time. And that's, unfortunately, you think like, oh, can you handle dieting? And it's not that. It's like, can you handle what happens after you diet? Because prep's the fun part if you love bodybuilding. I don't know. Like prep was the fun. Like when you're seeing things happen, you're making progress. And what sucks is off-season progress for a real physique athlete, real bodybuilder, doesn't look like progress to uneducated people. And unfortunately, most of the world, including everyone on the internet, is uneducated. So like you could be having the best off season ever, setting yourself up for the best season ever in 2 years. But you in the mirror, your friends or whatever, think you look shittier, and you have to have the grit and understanding of what you're doing and stand by you. And I'd argue that I wasn't strong enough for that. But the prep, I can starve all day for whatever fucking
the body
reason.
Dysmorphia is it's real and like it never goes away. You just kind of learn to I guess isolated to that specific task.
Yes.
But it's always going to be, there's always going to be something not good enough about your body if you really, this is just something you want to do for an extended period of time. And yeah, that kind of sucks. I remember my first prep going from like, just as soon as I caught a little pump, it's like, all right, this sweater's off. And it's like, the gym wasn't even training no more. They were just like watching me do my thing. And then fast forward 15 pounds later, it's like, it's, guys, look at me, man. I got a good pump, you know? From that point on, like that's like what I consider like me in fantastic shape is bodybuilding shape. And that's something that you're just not ready for your first go around, especially if it's one of those things where you're going to use it as a catalyst to, you know, kind of get the body you want.
Yeah, like your standards for yourself are forever changed. And for most people, that's not emotionally positive.
No, and you have to actively then try to change them once you're a competitor again towards something healthier. And that's a continuous. And like each time you compete, it makes like you lose a step there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you do.
So I think a really easy rubric based on kind of what you were saying, Andrea, like we're talking about fixing something or not liking the way you look. If you are not yet competing and you currently find yourself going back and forth to diets because you don't like the way you look, and I'd say that's a huge proportion of people, probably a larger proportion of women because of additional societal pressures they often have to look a certain way. And we've got, you know, data on body image and eating disorders. They're more prevalent. Unfortunately, they're also growing in men. Thank you, Instagram. I think, like, look at it this way. All right, you're currently not always happy with the way you look. Maybe that's secondary. You also love to lift. You don't just lift and currently, you know, do stuff with your nutrition because you don't like the way you look. That's great. But if you're currently struggling and you find yourself with the push and pull of non-competitive diets, do you think that asking to then lose an additional 5 to 10% of your body weight and then have to be naked, not just in front of your own mirror, but 7 judges who are literally going to judge you, is going to make that better
and Instagram
or worse? Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Because no one's prepping and not putting photos up.
That's right. So I think an easy rubric is you got to be good with yourself in your non-competitive or pre-competitive life to start, because it's only going to get worse, in my opinion, for most people, or at least more challenging, I should say. And yeah, to back up what both of you guys are saying, you know, you go through this process, it changes your perspective on what, you know, being in the quote unquote best shape of your life is. And prep is, I would say, it's not easy. Prep is absolutely crushingly hard sometimes, but it makes sense. It's supposed to be hard. You know, it'll be hard. It's predictably hard from a coach's perspective or someone else who can tell you what's going on. You lower your calories, you feel worse. You do more cardio, you feel worse. You get leaner, you feel worse. Sometimes you're plateaued and you're stressed because of it, because you know what you want to happen and what's not happening. So what do? You do the aforementioned things, or sometimes maybe your refeed, et cetera, et cetera. It all makes sense. But then, let's say you are told in your competitions, hey, you had pretty good shape, but you need to be bigger. Then you start your off season. And man, you dieted so hard because you got pretty damn lean. No, hey, if you're one of the few who did your first competition and you weren't told you need to be leaner, you're one of the few. Great job. You got in great shape. Yeah. That also means that you're probably one of the hungrier folks after your first competition, and you've never dealt with this before. So you're probably going to be a lot heavier real quick and all of a sudden not looking the part. This is basically what I experienced in 07. Everyone just said, get huge, bro. And I got so huge so fast that it became a problem with my goals to get huge. Because I remembered how hard it was for me to lose 30 pounds. And I was like, my God, I don't want to do that. And here I am, 16 pounds over my, or 15 pounds over my original stage weight. Now I have to lose 45 in my head is what's going on. I'm like, but I need to get bigger, but I'm gaining too fast, but I can't stop eating, but I don't want to have to diet off 45 pounds. And for the first time in my life, I feel like I look fat. I don't like that either. And that push and pull can become very real. And I was someone who had I would argue probably zero body image issues before I got into bodybuilding. So yeah, it can happen to anybody. And I absolutely had to start, like Berto said, like compartmentalizing my body image in the off season as its own thing. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm gaining some body fat so long as it is coming along with some muscle. I ignore the fat because it's in service of that. But that's much easier said than done. And each time you spend a 6 to 9 month period, like I just recently did in 2019, bending your entire will to get as shredded as possible, that you erode that crafted compartment that you made for your off season. You know, even going, you know, 20 pounds up from my last season, not 45, was challenging this time. And I had to go, am I getting too fast? Am I getting too slow? And I had to kind of, you know, shake myself and be like, Eric, dude, this ain't your first rodeo. Like, nobody cares. You don't even really care. So why do you care? Like, oh, yeah. Fuck, you're right. You know?
Well, it's hard not to celebrate your victory on the way. And like, we joke and say like, well, who doesn't prep without putting on the gram? Like, I mean, we don't. Nobody. Actually, you know what? Now I think about it. We do have a few athletes that there'll be like one or two pictures, but that's not common. It's like, you know, it's human. Like, we do good and we want to share it. We feel good about ourselves. You gain confidence. You know, not just in the way you look, but in the things you're executing every day to get there. Like, it's like a very shortened version of a lot of years of like personal development in a weird way, right? You're like, I'm just becoming this awesome human. I can do all these things. And then when it goes away, that's like the worst feeling. I don't know. But it's not actually a way. You still had all that growth, but it's like the very stark, like show day to not show day, or last show day to end of season. It's just like, there's this immediate fall. I mean, Eric, I know you just recently went through that, but like, it doesn't last as long, the better you get at it, whatever. But it's just, it's a switch that flicks off. And I don't know. It's like your whole personality, really.
Yeah, it becomes very engrossing because the task is so engrossing to get there in the first place. I think I did a great job in 2019, but like you said, even for someone experienced, there's still that, like, if you got like 95 out of 100, you know, right frame of mind for the off season, you take yourself through a 9 month contest prep and get really, really lean, yeah, you're probably gonna be around 85, you know? Mm-hmm. So the work needs to be redone. Like it's, I posted not easy a picture. Work. No, it's not. I posted a picture of me 10 kilos up from my stage weight, you know, like recovery diet pretty much done. Like, here I'm in my underwear in Singapore with Berto. I don't look amazing, but this is good. This is where I need to be. But I mean, I wasn't like 100% comfortable with that. Like, Berto was there, you know, I did it and I was happy about it. And I saw it as a net win, but it required self-talk. It wasn't just like, yep, it's going to, let me quickly take off my pants here and show people the body fat I've gained, you know?
And Eric was real quick to take his pants off during prep.
As man, we all tell you what.
No, but what's funny is just now you said like, I didn't look amazing, blah, blah, blah. Like, for most humans, you look amazing. You look amazing. You're just, you can't unsee it from where you were however many weeks ago.
Absolutely.
Like, you didn't I'm basing look it on, like shit.
My standard is, well, of course, you know, bodybuilders should have striated glutes all the time. You know, it's kind of like where your brain gets. And I think that's why it's so important to have a good coach, is that you start to, you shift your goalposts the entire contest prep, which you need to. Like, if you want to have striated glutes, you don't want to be the person who's like, well, my quads are separated and I got abs. I'm like, well, it's not 1978, so that's, you need to keep dieting, you know? So it's, and then once you do that, you're like, all right, got it. I'm a human. I will adjust my standards. Now I'm looking at my glutes. I've got to have striated glutes, or I need to have, you know, paper thin skin. I need to see veins everywhere, whatever the standard for your division is. That's not a switch you flip. It's a perspective shift, which then requires some time for that momentum to get picked up again, even for someone who's been back and across it multiple times. I don't want to speak for Jeff, but he's the most experienced out of all of us. He's not on, but he has shared in his vlogs, for those who watch him, they're great, that every time he gains weight in the off season, he has a little bit of insecurity around that. you know? Yeah. And I think it's really great that Jeff talks so openly about his insecurity. I think, I mean, Jeff's not the example for all experienced bodybuilders, but I think most retain some level of insecurity, or at the very least have to manage it. You know, these things, nothing ever disappears, right? Like, you're not a, it's not brave to not ever be afraid. That just means you're a robot. You know, bravery is, you know, courage in the face of fear, making a decision despite being afraid. And I think there's a parallel there with making the right decisions in the off season and reframing purposefully and accepting your insecurity and then going, and that's a part of the process. And I'm going to do this. And I think it's unreasonable to expect to be able to do that on your first, second, or maybe even third run.
Yeah. I like too what you said, how your standards change on the way into it. Like how you're like, cool, I got abs, whatever, but like, I got to keep going. And I'm going to butcher to try to paraphrase myself to something from that talk you talked about too, where it's like something about how like you have to, there's off season, normal, healthy, not dieting, maybe even like you said, you'd never had body image issues before, whatever. But like to be good at bodybuilding or to get lean enough for almost all the divisions to get lean enough to do well at almost all the divisions, you have to go somewhere very dark and very unstable and very mentally unhealthy. You have to think that fitness model lean is shit. You have to, you know, you have to think like, I'm not done. I'm not good enough. Of course it hurts. Who cares? Like the self-talk is outrageous and you have to feel, you're going to feel terrible and you have to, think a lot of dark things and be, and have a very terrible relationship with yourself and food. You have to get that lean. And then,
I'm going to push back on that a little bit, okay. Just the way you framed it.
Sorry.
Go ahead. I don't think you have to have a terrible relationship with yourself. I don't think it necessarily needs to get dark, but you absolutely have to hold yourself to a standard that requires consistently uncomfortable effort and no room for rationalization.
Like, all right. I got
so that. There's a difference between the harsh self-criticism where you're like, you're shit if you're not lean to
good. Okay.
You know what I'm saying? To saying this isn't lean enough. And you're like, but I've got like glute serrations, like they're not at the top. Like, do you want to be the best? You have to go further. Not your shit. And if you want to go further. And that's the only reason I make that distinction is I actually wrote about this in the most recent Mass article. And there is many athletes do have that really harsh self-criticism where they have negative self-talk and they also have higher levels of mental stress. And some athletes they hold themselves to an unreasonably high standard for anything outside of being a high performing athlete because they have to, but they don't necessarily say, oh, and also this has implications about who you are as a human. You know,
I like
they don't
that
necessarily.
Pushback.
Yeah. And so, I mean, but I think it's very easy and you have to consciously make sure that it doesn't become, fitness model lean as shit, you know, like,
you know, I would push back one more time and say that
we're just pushing each other, Andrew.
I know. It's like, you know what I thought of immediately? It was like John Travolta and whoever Sandra Dee when they're going back and forth in the thing, pushing each other. I think that was us right now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You better shape
up. Or any
up.
Seventh grade fight that doesn't actually turn into a real fight.
No,
where you just push each other until you get broken up.
But the next push is that you have to think that a healthy body is not good enough. Or maybe know that it's not good enough for your goals. But it's definitely unhealthy physically.
Yes. I agree with that.
But I do like, I do appreciate if you maintained that pushback. I do.
And I would say if you maintain that mindset, even without the self-criticism long-term, it would also be unhealthy.
Yeah.
I think, and that's something we don't acknowledge a lot is like, oh, there is no off-season. It's like shut the hell up. Like every sport has an off-season. You can't stay at peak arousal all the time or it's not peak arousal. You can't always go in. Like you can't be like crush it all the time. No offense, Doug Miller. Like I'm not saying like champions do know how to bring it more often than not, but they also understand recovery. They also understand balance, or none of them would have families or lives or jobs or any
or
of that.
Sleep,
so it's
or, yeah.
Exactly, right? Why am I sleeping when I could be training? Like, you don't train 24/7. Like, I think, like, Lee Haney, 8-time Mr. Olympia, you know, you stimulate, you don't annihilate. Like, he understands appropriate effort and appropriate levels of intensity, and he holds himself to an incredibly high standard and always goes there and does everything he can. But that is distinct from.
I appreciate that.
But I also would say, I think you're 100% right that more often than not, that distinction isn't made by first time competitors.
Oh no, I was terrible to myself. I know that even through all my diets. But what Eric said, not what I said, how terrible it has to be, or like how hard you have to be on yourself and your expectations get a little wacky. But that's why, like, I almost feel like, it's not bad if bodybuilding isn't for you, because that just means you're probably like normal. Like, if dieting to that level is like, if you can't mentally go there, that's not weak. That's not anything bad about you. It's like, you're probably a healthier person, you know,
you're
like,
not pathological.
Yeah. Like,
your body's trying to give you every single sign that like, man, this is messed up. Like,
what are you doing? Body, like, whatever.
I like to explain to people that it's just something that people in developed countries just don't experience. Like, legitimately, like, you get to the point, like, this is what humans felt like 50,000 years ago, like, during a drought and it was a bad winter, like, this is what it was. It's hard to even explain until, like, you're actually there, because it looks totally different, you know, with everyone.
Your body's telling you along the way that you're getting more and more and more and more and more vulnerable to death.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And you're like, stop.
And you're like, I'm aware of that. But Taco Bell is still right there. I'm going to be fine. But I do need to get on stage for some very important reasons, like this plastic trophy and a piece of paper that says pro on it. Okay. So you leave me alone, body.
But yeah, it's that push. It goes against, like Andrew said, it's that push where you're literally willing yourself to, like, I you know, there's more and there's more and there's more. And like you said, Eric, it just, as you get more, it just gets worse. And it's, I think, people who have done this and enjoy it, it's actually a good chunk of it is like not fun. Like, it's got a lot of that. Like, I guess, like,
yeah,
like
any other sport. Yeah, but how is it? Because you see results.
So here's the messed up thing. It's just Pavlov's dog. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, on like a very cognitive level, high performing athletes, and especially athletes in sports that require a fair amount of consistent punishment. And again, I don't mean that actually like punishing yourself, although again, many do. It doesn't have to take on a masochistic tilt, but continued difficult, discomforting effort that doesn't allow you to tune out, which happens in the kitchen and the gym for bodybuilding. That is something that athletes are basically rewiring their brain to associate as a good thing. You know, I mean, how many times have we as athletes on our own or as coaches heard, coach, I think something's wrong. I'm losing weight. I look leaner, but I had a really easy week.
Yeah.
They figured out as they're typing, like, why am I, this is weird. You know, I specifically remember reporting this to like Lane in 2009, and I've said it to you as well, Berto, at some point. I'm just like, I don't know. Does that mean I'm losing muscle or something? Like, cause I'm losing weight. It's easy. I'm not plateaued, and I didn't have to do more cardio, and like my food dropped on a refeed. Something's wrong because I'm associating brutal pain and effort and consistent focus, not being a little more lax and seeing progress. So clearly something's wrong, you know, it's the wrong association. So it sends off an alarm bell in our brains, even though it's completely illogical and from an outside observer, irrational. So I think it is, we're associating something that is not fun with something that's fun, as inversely strange as that is.
Well, what's also strange is I've done a lot of sports, and what is exciting and fun or whatever about all the other ones, including bodybuilding during prep, is that you acquire skills to get better at this thing. And over time, as you become more experienced, those things stick with you and you build on them. It like goes forward, forward, forward. There might be like little baby dips, but it's forward, forward. Bodybuilding, like all the shit you learn in prep, you cannot carry that with you. You can carry it to the next one 2 or 3 years later, but there's this in-between time. You have to learn a whole new set of skills. And that's the
I'd say all so whatever your baseline habits are, and this is the dangerous part for people who just want to do this.
Yeah.
There's a good chance you're just going to be absolutely wrecked.
Yeah.
And I remember, so I didn't count calories until like my second prep, which was a prep where I actually got lean and the system worked. And I remember previous, I had never tracked a calorie really. I kind of just winged it some. And, but it worked really well. It worked really well. And post that, I was trying to still kind of do what I did during the prep because I'm like, oh, it's going to work just as well on this side if, you know, if I hit like my carb allotment to the T, like, you know, every single day. You know, and then at a certain point, I realized like, whoa, hold up. Like, don't discount everything you did. Because, you know, before you got on stage, you trained really hard, you did your thing, you lived the lifestyle for like a good 6-7 years. That worked really freaking well. And obviously, yeah, everything wasn't perfect, but that was not bad. And you had a lot of fun doing that. And it was very manageable. And you were able to like mesh that with the rest of your life. But right now, you can't go out sometimes because your macros are off. Like, I'm like, do I really want to live this way? So, you know, I thought I was pretty solid at that point when it came to my habits, like things were pretty well in line. I had my bodybuilding under control, but it completely took my habits, like ripped them apart. And like, here I am trying to like piece all that together and try to get that blueprint that worked really well before. So I think it's super important to get those habits up to a certain point where, and again, going back to prerequisites, cause like the prep is going to, there's a good chance it's absolutely going to just demolish those.
Yeah, because Eric had never been big until after bodybuilding, as in like overweight.
And the system was pretty good before. Like, yeah, I mean, he was a little bit more detailed with his nutrition than I was at the time, but nevertheless, it was very manageable. Like Eric was just a normal dude in the off season. And then, you know, and then it was like, 3 fast food visits in like 4 hours, like you know, and then
train wreck.
So it's crazy what that does, and it does that to the most like logical, sensible of people.
Yeah. I think you know, to your point, Andrea, like the frame of mind you have to get into to be successful in prep is. It's not really an option to not have some element of that laser-like focus and commitment and willingness to, like, an open-ended willingness, basically. Like, whatever needs to be done, I understand it'll be hard, I'll do it, it'll be hard, and I'll acclimate to that new level of hardness, and I'll keep going. All good. Like, that is a frame of mind you get yourself into during prep, and especially at a certain point. Like, I remember 2019, I was cruising for a long time. And then it was like, well, fuck, I got to be on an average of 1600 calories while I'm doing daily cardio and no refeeds for 10 days in a row. Like,
he's okay. Over 6 feet tall.
Yeah. Well, 180 pounds on stage.
He but is that's not what my I gotta size. Do.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that's just what I had to do. I think I can flip that switch, and it's a mentally pretty easy place to go to, and then you just accept the suffering. And getting that skill is a 100% necessity, but it is also a big part of the reason why bodybuilders struggle in general, because that it's a double-edged sword. The same mindset that allows you to be a bodybuilder is the same mindset that doesn't allow you to turn it off in the off season. It's the same mindset that rips apart your habits, that supplants them with things like I'm going to hit macros and track everything and pull you the opposite direction of where you need to be at the times when you don't need to have this switch on. It's like you turn the switch on, and I'd say for the first couple of years of bodybuilding, I couldn't find like, oh, this doesn't have an off switch.
Yeah.
There's an on button, and I pushed it again, it's still on. Like, yeah. This machine should not be built this way. It probably took me, realistically, if I'm not, like, basically, I grew up my whole life just as a skinny dude. I just ate whatever the hell I wanted, didn't think about it. And then I started, you know, I got into bodybuilding and I did the seafood diet, which is, you know, pretty easy, which just meant I have to eat more and not worry about it. Dieted, habits got exploded. And I would say 2011, late 2011, early 2012, before I got back to quote unquote eating whatever I wanted, not worrying about it, but really being like high protein and other bodybuilding type things, you know, but like my pre-contest bodybuilding eating behaviors would came without effort. So that's a non-negligible number of years. That's like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Obviously there wasn't, you know, information was a little different back then. I think we would have been pretty open to that, but it was just a different time. I think the closest to someone reasonable was maybe, you know, Dr. Joe. And I remember sometimes we look at the information he was dispensing, because me and Eric could be on all the forums, man. We were just out there trying to gather all the info we could. And, you know, I'd hit up Eric with like, do you see that? Like, Joe's not going to get this guy shredded. Like, cut his calories, man. Like, you know, and like, we didn't understand all the moving parts, like all the way. And Joe, you know, again, like he was just ahead of his time. Like, probably still is, man. You know, like every time I have a talk with Joe, it's like, oh shoot. Like that's what I've been trying to piece together in my head, man. Thank you. But we took the long route, and you know, again, one of the reasons we wanted to have this discussion is just because we want to leave this sport better than how we found it. And and again, like I think a lot of other sports are so much more standardized. You know, it's like kids up until a certain point, it's like you playing flag football. And then when you get to high school, between you and your parents, you can decide if you want to do the full contact running into each other sort of thing. You know, with bodybuilding, it's not so much. Like there's a lot of money hungry coaches out there that are like, baby, you are the next big thing. Sign up. Let's do this. You know, and like this person's been training for like 4 months. You know, they just lost their first 10 pounds and they're geeked and they're excited. And it's like they're about to get steamrolled by the sport because they don't know exactly what it is they're signing up for.
But like we love it.
Yes.
Okay, we love it. I don't think I'll ever do it again, but we love it, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Fantastic. And that is all, that's also, we've been kind of playing two ends of the spectrum. Like, oh, there's us, but then a lot of people, blah. But I think Andrea's experience is also quite common. I would also put my wife Barb in that bucket, and also like Adam Ripa, a number of people who did the contest prep thing, experienced the positives and the negatives, and then, you know, came back from that, had to relearn life, and were like, sweet, I gained X, Y, and Z from contest prep. I don't need to do that again, or I'm not, the sun ain't calling me. I don't need to fly up to it. But yeah, it was a good life experience. And that may sound like it's in conflict with what I was saying about it being like not a fitness bucket list item, but I think it's really important that you put bodybuilding. Yeah, is it a fitness thing, or is it like it's extreme contest dieting? That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, because I don't have a fitness bucket list. I want to go hard in a sport. Always have. Mm-hmm. And that was my sport at the time. And it had to be replaced for me to realize like that probably wasn't the best fit. If only because I just hated the downtime. No joke. Like, I have no problem in season. Off season was grueling mentally. That's it. I just didn't like it. Like, what do you mean? I can't just keep prepping. What do you mean? I have to off season. Yeah.
A lot of athletes, it feels like, especially with our model, like cool. So I'm going to do S&C for a sport for 2 years that I don't get to compete in for 2 years. So wait. So let me get this straight. I'm just going to train, but not actually compete for 2 years. And no one will be able to tell from looking at me that I actually do this sport. And I don't get to, like, I can't post, but there's nothing for me to do except just focus on the off season. Like,
I mean, I can post if y'all want, but everyone will make fun of me. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, exactly. You know, like, so it's, I think a good way to frame bodybuilding is that if you love lifting, that's great. You may or may not like competitive starvation in concordance with lifting. And in fact, I would think there's no reason you would expect to, nor should you. And the vast majority of people don't like to starve. So don't. But I'm not saying that you may not want to. And those artistic, those creative elements, those competitive elements, that nadir where they all kind of come together, which makes someone just love the sport of bodybuilding, where they know how hard it is to push yourself. You understand the extreme dedication. And I think actually one of the cool things about competing, even if you only do it once, is you start to appreciate the long-term accomplishments of bodybuilders. Mm-hmm. Not just what did they look like that time they hit that perfect peak and all that. Oh, remember dude's physique at the 1993 Night of Champions? That was sick. Okay, cool. What about the dude who's been competing for 35 years, you know, who's been on stage since they were 19 until they were a Masters 2 competitor? And to think about that they go to the sun and they come back over and over and over again, and they haven't yet burnt up to a crisp or crashed to the earth and never gotten back up. So I think that's an important little piece to understand, is that, yes, it is absolutely something that displays a certain amount of impressive dedication and desire. But I think a lot of people can do it once. I think very few can do it long term. And I think a lot of people might try to do it long term with the mentality of doing it once in a repeated manner. They go all in and then all out and then all in and all out. And that is the fastest way I've ever seen to burn out.
And the exact opposite. I've seen people at my gym who they don't compete. And I'm like, I really wish you would do this, because their specific situation, I'm like, you're going to get so much out of it at some point. So I think there is a certain point for that, that more long-term gym rat, where it's like, man, I think this is the appropriate stage for you, because, you know, you have everything. And again, just do it once. Don't do it again. There's this one girl I can think of at one of my gyms where just bomb-ass physique. But you can tell she's always there, like training hard, like she's 3 weeks out. Must have her habits and dialed in, because not super big, but like in terms of shape, it's like, you know, she's in pretty lean. So for the right person, it's like the appropriate step. But it's I think, again, you got to go over a bunch of things and make sure you got all your GE requirements out the way before, you know, you end up in the wrong class, basically.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's not like it's for nobody, and we're like, it's just, you know, I say y'all, like, as a company, we get hundreds of people per year, and there's just like trends. And like, honestly, most of them we have to tell to wait or not. Yeah. It's not like we're talking them into it.
No, I think, one of the people who I've talked about a couple of times, who is not natural and very extreme, but who I think a certain element of his perspective is something we should focus on, is Ronnie Coleman. So dude was one of those people Berto was talking about. Everyone around him was like, you need to compete. And yeah, some people will just talk about the fact that he had veins in his quads visible through sweatpants. But I think a lot of them are actually talking about just how he seemed like his mentality was built for it. And what I mean by that is that he first started competing because he got a free gym membership out of it. It sounds like a joke, it's 100%. Like, he's repeated it so many times. He said it very seriously. Like, the man loves to train. His life is like, his favorite part of the day is going to lift weights. Mm-hmm. And, you know, competing came after that. It came secondary to that. And he was also holding these two things at the same time. One of the most driven competitors, who was hungry, dominant, confident, and, you know, won 8 Mr. Olympias. He shares that with Lee Haney. But guess what? When he retired, did he stop training? No. Like, he still trains to his detriment. Like, the man had a back surgery that went wrong and now has been like in and out of a wheelchair and has been in constant pain, and you can't keep him out of the gym. So I think that just really goes to show like what should be at the core. And if you're someone who is training to look a certain way, and then you feel like, oh, I want to look a certain way, and I really like the idea of looking a certain way, or maybe I maintain looking a certain way, but it's because I don't want to not look like that, right? I don't like the way I am if I don't train, if I don't eat, and oh, maybe therefore I could compete. It's just going to make it harder. Like, if you're currently out of a dislike of your body when you don't train and control your nutrition, looking good, and someone tells you, oh, you should compete, that's terrible. Please don't. Like, what you need to do is focus on, you know, seeing yourself as good enough, worthy, awesome, and training and eating a certain way as a way to build you up, not correct something that's wrong with you. Because then bringing in the opinion of seven other people and getting even leaner is not going to change that relationship for the better, I guarantee it.
Yeah. And like, that's on a, we say that all the time on a micro scale with like people dieting for vacations, dieting for their wedding, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, and every time they're like, and this is how I look now. And then they go on their honeymoon or the vacation's over and they're like, oh, I guess we'll do it again in 2 months and we'll do it again in 2 months. And it's just unfortunate that bodybuilding is so often just like the end to the yo-yo, when it just creates a bigger yo-yo plot twist, the opposite of what you wanted. Over and over.
I like training on vacation. Sometimes I get excited about trying to make it work at odd remote gym locations or where they only have machines. You know, I don't necessarily like, oh no, sorry, Barb, we don't get to see this attraction because I got to train today. But I will try to get in at least 2 training sessions a week when I'm on vacation. And I genuinely enjoy them. They're a fun part of my vacation, being in a new gym environment where I don't know what's going on. I get to try to figure out how to have a good session.
But you don't diet to look away for the photos on vacation.
No, I've never dieted for a vacation.
Yeah. Well, and like we laugh about it, but it's so common. And people want to do it. Like we have people apply to do it. And you're like, what? No, don't.
Yeah.
Not whether or not we can help you, but like, why is that your goal? And it's like, then we have to refer them to Rizzo because it's kind of not our place. But
yeah. No, like Eric said, and like with Ronnie, it's like, man, it's our fix. It's our, it's like just part of your culture. It's just something you do every day. Like if I decided to retire from bodybuilding, like I would still be there in the gym, just thrilled about, I don't know, my next set of leg press. Cause it makes me excited and nervous and makes me feel alive and in pain and fantastic and all these things.
That's how I feel at gymnastics.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I don't lift anymore.
I need that. I need that. And,
I still try to make gains even if I'm not getting on stage, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that that's it too. It's like the three of us have trained around each other many times. Like I'm sure a lot of listeners too, like we fucking love training, y'all. We'll spend like 4 hours there. And it's like, I don't know. I thought that is like like you said, are you training to keep yourself from looking bad or do you actually love it? And that should be a step one, negative one, to bodybuilding because it is building, not dieting.
I do think there are many people who feel a pressure to look a certain way, find out that training and nutrition is the way they get there, and find a happy okayness with the process, or they discover, oh, like exercise is okay, you know? And I think that is like a lightweight version of holding your finger into a dam. You know, like, okay, cool. Just won't let any water come out there. And then like taking that mentality into bodybuilding as someone coming over and like driving a ship through the dam, be like, and then figure it out, you know? But I think where you want to be instead is actively like, I want to build an aqueduct, you know? I want to build something. Like I'm not trying to prevent something. I'm trying to create something. I'm defining myself as something. I'm becoming bigger. I'm becoming stronger. I am becoming more resilient. I am increasing my own self-belief. I am telling myself and teaching myself that I can overcome adversity. Bodybuilding is a really cool way to express that, and I dig it. Yeah. That's the people who stick with it. Not those. And there's nothing wrong if you're like, I don't want to make it come across as though we're making fun or being disrespectful to people who are currently training and eating because they don't like the way they look. I would say that's probably the majority of people in fitness. I mean, that's basically the model
that is
of fitness. That's the fitness industrial complex, you know, as Chip Conrad would say, you know, we're broke. You're broke, but we can fix you. Don't worry, you know, like, and just give me some money and I'll give you a diet plan and nutrition. And I think that is, a lot of people in that industry will look up to bodybuilders as kind of like, oh, they've made it, but it should be a wholly different mentality.
You know what sucks the most about that, or what's something that I think, like you said, bodybuilders seem like they have it figured out because they look this certain way. But if you take a step back and like watch the Olympics or whatever, there are If you don't want to compete in bodybuilding, and a lot of times people think it's like too scary and muscular when they see someone on stage, but it's like when you said like there's this whole marketing thing of like, we can fix you with diet and like weights or bands or these circuits or whatever. But it's like, if you find an activity that you love enough, you don't have to lift. Like, if you don't love lifting, I guess what makes me so upset about it all is like, you can do the marathon training. You can join Zumba. You can, like, there's a lot of ways to be healthy and not obese in a way that you enjoy. And I think that unfortunately, because marketing sees like bodybuilders look the best, I want to be in fitness. Well, that's the way it's told to me. But I mean, there's just a myriad of things that you can do that you will love instead of like being a prison to like Gold's Gym, where it's like, you can do all kinds of shit. That's, I mean, you know what iron culture is all about. I know, but it's like, man, like if you want a more technical challenge, like you could do weightlifting, you could like literal weightlifting, like Olympic lifting, like Eric does. I go to gymnastics. I used to compete and I am competitive, but when I go to hashtag adult gymnastics class, there are some people who are like my age, like mid-30s, that started it like 2 years ago, and they're having the time of their life. And they're burning the calories and they're getting stronger and they're, you know, whatever. I know Chip does what, movement classes, just like movement. So, I mean, I don't know, you could do acting, you could do choir, you could do like, I just, it makes me sad when we've talked about many times, like those people that want to be fixed, when it's like, you just haven't found the thing you love yet. Like, it doesn't have to be this. It really doesn't have to be this.
There's nothing wrong with like wanting to update the way you look, but so long as it comes like from a good place. It's like, you know, because I love myself. Like I think I can do better, and let me treat myself to something. So, and that's
treat
where
myself
again,
is
like,
nice. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, because that is what it is for a lot of people. Like, I know a lot of folks that, you know, bodybuilding started as like, I want to lose some weight, you know, but it came from that perspective. It, you know, they didn't necessarily, the ones that, you know, obviously they've been doing it for a while now. It was a treat to themselves.
Yeah,
it was
like your
it
mom.
It had the best intentions. Yeah, yeah, it was out of self love. You know, it's like, you know what, I can treat myself better than this, so long as it comes from that perspective. And I think the people who are trying to do a contest prep because, you know, there's something wrong with their life or you know, they don't necessarily like themselves. One of my favorite quotes, it's not mine, so let's not put this on a square. it was a friend from the bodybuilding message boards. His name was Devin. He was Canadian, great bodybuilder, diabetic too, if I recall. He just, on the enhanced side, but like one of the most reasonable people I've met in regards to bodybuilding. But it was one of his friend's quotes, and it was like, you know, there's, I guess, two different kinds of people. I'm butchering it for sure, but it's like, you know, people who like bodybuilding, and then there's people who like themselves in bodybuilding. And that's where the trap is. It's like when, you know, you go through your prep, it's a 4 or 5 month thing, and you absolutely loved yourself, you know, during that time. And then it's over, and it's like, oh, shoot, this is really the only way I know how to love myself is when I'm within this little biodome here. Yeah.
And then it begs the question of like, did you, cause sometimes it is like, do you love the way you look, which I think everyone kind of does. But also with me, like I said, I really loved too much how I was like, and I'm fucking hard and I can do anything. And like, you know, like I get a little crazy. Like, oh, I like, I still
that at work mentality.
Yeah, dude. And it's fun. It's addicting. Mm-hmm. It, you know, and then you tell me
it's empowering.
Yeah. Ooh, I don't like that word, but you're so right. It is a good word. I just don't like it. But yes, it makes you feel.
It's a very cliche word. Yes. It's used in a lot of contexts and sometimes not always well.
Yes, but you're right. Like you feel like the superhuman, and then when you can't prep, it's like the opposite, and you're like, well, shit, what do I do now? You know,
maybe I'm not a superhuman. Damn it.
I know, but it did teach me, or like bring to light, and like Berto's who is my coach through a lot of this. Is so encouraging now because he's like, oh, this is you happy. Like, And for the listeners who don't know what I like, now I do gymnastics, but it took me like, I did CrossFit-ish stuff for a couple years, and it took me growing up as a gymnast, like realizing again that like, oh, I don't have to starve. I just really love hard physical challenges. Because a Metcon did the same thing for me, and I could do that every other day, every day. I didn't have to do a prep and kill myself for 6 months. I can get the joy from my sport in small daily doses rather than a 6 month long slog and then followed by a year of unhappiness.
Yeah, believe it or not, you can have health and fitness in the complete absence of intentional weight loss. Like, who knew that health and getting leaner weren't the same thing? It's in fact, every bodybuilder I know gets less healthy in a lot of objective ways when they diet down to very lean levels. I think, and that's one of those. I think that's one of those things that I think is a positive that comes out of some of the kind of the discussions around like intuitive eating and haze and some of that stuff is just like a lot of people might like they would agree with that if they logically hear like, you know, of course, like, you know, if you start exercising and if you start eating more fruits and vegetables and a higher protein diet and you don't lose weight, you're going to have better blood work. You will be healthier. You're going to have, you know, much better blood glucose levels and all this stuff. But their default setting, if you don't prime them with that, if you just be like, you know, so what should health and fitness look like? You're probably like, oh, leaner's better. It's kind of like kind of the default setting. Right. Or like, okay, well, maybe lose a little bit of weight. You know, like, do you need to? Do you have to diet? Like, I think a lot of trainers notice this just from the level of recidivism.
Can you explain that word?
Recidivism is like when someone is I love the way you said that. Like that's when someone is a repeat offender and that they, okay. they return to prison or basically having to redo something, right? Okay. So as a trainer, this is something I think most trainers have been around for a while notice. You'll have a client who signs up for weight loss and they regain the weight and then they try to lose it again with you. And many times you're kind of just like, man, but can we focus on the fact that you used to do the 20s and now you do the 40s? Can we focus on the fact that you used to have to walk, you know, between each one of your HIIT sessions and now you jog between, you know, can we focus on the fact that your posture is better, that your doctor is like amazed and he's been referring me other people because of how good your blood work looks. And that's still happening while your waist circumference is going up and down, but you're just developing some really shitty relationship with food in your body. Like, can we just leave weight loss out of it? And the crazy thing is that most of the time, if you can get them to start on that path, if they are very high in body fat, they might lose some inches and some body fat and maybe some pounds on the scale just because they're getting healthier. But by focusing on it, and especially to the extreme level of bodybuilding, it often causes more harm than good. So I think if we know that for seemingly innocuous amounts of weight loss, like losing 10 pounds or going from, you know, 35% body fat to 25%, it only gets worse when you try to go from like 20% to 10% for a gal, you know?
Yeah. But it's so fun while it's happening. It's how they get you.
Yeah.
I don't know. And don't get
me
wrong.
It's to me, bodybuilding, it's like, it's taken everything away from me at certain points, you know, and then it's given them back and, you know, I'm able to better do things. So I'm super grateful for everything. But, you know, at the same time, I was fortunate enough to just have a few things like laid out, right? It was totally not intentional, but it worked out that way. But at the same time, there's certainly some things there where, man, I'm like, nobody freaking told me. No one freaking told me. And ironically, they were during the times that were on the outside, it looked like it was like the most glorious of things. Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm.
You can't tell someone what it feels like.
Yeah, you can, but man, I've literally had people, because you don't want to nocebo your clients either, because people do have different experiences. Some people have a rougher time than others. You don't want to be like, your life's going to fucking end if you compete. You're going to hate it. But anyway, I got you. You know, like, then, like they're like, whoa. And, you know, they could over-catastrophize, under-catastrophize. I've had people who've experienced it to be harder or less hard, et cetera. But it's a challenge for everyone, but to varying degrees and in different ways, somewhat. There are definitely some unifying experiences. But I have absolutely informed someone like, you know, like, I don't think we should push to get this lean, you know, even for like a non-competition cut. Like, I want to just this, I want to do a photo shoot. But hey, like, if you get this lean, you're going to be uncontrollably eating or you're going to risk that. And then after, like, I had no idea, coach. I'm like, well, I feel like you had some idea because I told you, but it is not the same experiencing it. Like, if you've never experienced losing agency over deciding whether to eat or not.
Yeah.
And then you, it's different, you know?
It is different to think about, to like smell food and have your body like do things.
I think the weirdest thing for me was I had never so obviously and so strongly had two different desires that were polar opposites at the same time. You know, like I want to eat all the tastiest food just as much as I want. And I want to look this way and not gain weight. Like I had those at the same time. I have those at the same time after each contest season. And like most of the time in my life, what I want is pretty aligned with other aspects of my personality. You know, there are sometimes it conflicts a little bit, you know, but after contest prep, they're like diametrically opposed. the two desires I have.
So you have the little, the red devil here and the little white shoulder or the white angel on the shoulder.
Yeah, and they're like, and they're not even talking to each other. They're like just straight pulling me in half and shit. Yeah.
I don't know. I think it took me a long time. Not a long time. Like somewhere along there, my first prep I did by myself, which was outrageous. Way too much weight lost too fast. But, and I was in grad school. And like the two things that really stick out, three things, I guess, that stick out to me were like, I literally had one of my friends like tell me for the first time in my whole life that I was being a bitch. Which, and like, I'm, as y'all know, very loud and talkative and social, but I was like, no, like I was just super in my head or whatever. And I was like, so are we going to hang out or whatever? And he was like, I don't want to hang out with you right now. And I was like right now. And he's like, no, like till you're done with this, you're kind of a bitch. I was like, oh damn. Okay. This never happened before. All right. Word. So there's that. And then
friends are important.
Yeah. Yeah.
Need to be honest. Well, that's just like
not super not me. Especially then, because like the year before, like we were out partying every weekend, you know, because grad school. And then I remember like after that prep, there was like a dark couple weeks, and I was like, put on 5 pounds, and I was like, this is where I'm gonna hang out, obviously. Maybe 10 pounds, but that's it. And I would like, then I would go out to bars again with my friends in grad school, but I would have celery in my purse while I'm drinking water. I'm like, I got this figured out. Life's figured out.
It felt totally reasonable.
Yeah. I'm like, so you can still go out. You just save half your carbs from the meal before and you put it in a Ziploc bag and you take it to the bar. And then at 1 a.m. you eat that. So you add this extra, I got it figured out, y'all. Like that was, it made perfect sense at the time. Now I forgot what the third thing is, but I remember excited. Those.
Well, I think it's just, I totally understand. I remember being excited when Walden Farms had their packet-based dressings and syrups because I could take them with me, take those with me to restaurants, and it was perfect, you know?
Birdo was with me and when I had those every meal.
I remember that, yeah.
And, you know, like, I'm not saying if you're doing that, it's unreasonable. There's not a time and a place for it. And I think most of us have experienced phasing out of that level of insanity is probably the way you also avoid gaining a whole lot of weight. And you kind of have to like, you lose touch with it so much that you have to kind of have a system, you know, even if our system is a lot more, I should say a lot less structured and restrictive than say like the traditional reverse diet, like the recovery diet is still a system. Because you know, some of that aspect is just the pendulum swinging back. And no matter how hashtag evidence-based you did to get on stage, you still got on stage, which means you were still freaking lean.
So. Yeah. I remember my third thing. Can I tell you?
Mm-hmm.
The third thing I very distinctly remember in grad school was like, because I was at OU, so it's like a huge campus, right? And I remember like almost crying one day because I found out via email that like I had to go run an errand in like two buildings over. And I was like, I can't walk there, y'all. Like, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to make it those 200 yards. Like, it was literally like the most upsetting email. And it was like, just like a quick little errand or whatever. And I was just like, how am I going to do this? Like, that's how terrible I felt.
I was on a, that's amazing. Yeah. I was on a Instagram live with, Astrid, the dietitian, the anti-diet dietitian.
Yes.
And she mentioned how like it must be tough for people to gain weight purposely after being in the best shape of their lives. And I was like, well, they're not in the best shape of their lives. they're useless, actually. Yeah, exactly. Like, this is someone who would cry if they had to go two buildings over, apparently, yes. In your case. And the amount of fatigue. I used to get frustrated if I had to get up and walk across a room when I was training people in 09 and stuff like that. And just, I remember the challenge of going, training people and having to put the face on and be positive and grab their weights for them and all that stuff. So it's like, yeah, you're not in the best shape of your life. You're in a chronic state of low energy availability. And it's amazing that you can get under a barbell and still perform.
I know, right? But I could train. But it's like, can we walk? What? Birdo, give us one. What's the experience that you're like, the first time
globally is like, I just lose my impulse control. Like I'm very much more reactive and probably less thoughtful when it comes to others. Like I've had it before where I'm prepping. I'm like, why am I even hanging out with this chick? Like this is such a bad idea. But I remember when I wanted to move out of California, like the guys made me wait 6 months, you know, cause it was, you know, post prep and everyone was getting shot up by my house, which hindsight was pretty reasonable. But still, it's like, yo, Bert, is that exactly where you want to go? You know, could we just go somewhere else in Cali? So, I waited 6 months because I was making a beeline to like, you know, I'm gonna get that U-Haul and we out of here, bro. But I get just much more. Again, it's like that. I think of it and it's like, man, you just guess if your body's starved. And I think it's kind of a male thing. You just like, you got to get reactive with it. It's like, go find something, go. And I wear myself out with that. Like I need to be extra cautious about like my chill time and like just do things that are of low value to me, but stimulating, you know? So just like I was doing yard work last time for fun. Like that was a way to get me to just like, calm down because I'm like, high
story,
alert.
This story isn't as good as ours. I did yard work.
Huh?
I know exactly what he's talking about.
That doesn't sound as terrible, but I did yard work. Although hanging out with chicks you shouldn't be hanging out with is hilarious, and I'm sorry about that. We'll watch out for you next time.
I think there's definitely something to be said for like the impulse control or poor decision making. I remember I seriously thought about like quitting my job in 2009. And I was like, yeah, we just bought a home. Like we're in the middle of a recession. We're broke. But I had like a combination of that hardcore empowered sense that you found that you got, Andrea, and impulse control. I was like, I'll figure it out. If I could figure out doing 2 days of cardio, I can figure out getting a job in the recession. And Barb's like, I'm not sure it works that way. You're keeping the fucking job. And I'm like, it's probably smart, you know?
Yeah. You know what I do like? I feel like speaking of positives, I feel like in some ways I get smarter. And I think that's just part of being a homo sapien. It's like, you know, you're starving. You're kind of weak compared to all the other animals. Like, you know what? Let's kind of work up here because you find yourself getting almost obsessive about whatever the task is. Like it's you know, I love that part. That's again, like, there's so much other suck attached.
Because I shouldn't be thinking about food. So I'm going to think real hard about this.
But little things like I just YouTube things and I'm like, I'm gonna learn to fix this deck, you know, So I like that part. So there are some perks.
That is true. Yeah.
That lasts for a while though. Like,
yeah.
2019, I got smarter and then I got dumb. Like Andrew, I want to say I was like, because we had a blog schedule at the time. I was like 3 months ahead on blogs for
stuff like that.
Minute.
Yeah.
And then he couldn't work for 6 months or 5 months or something.
Yeah, and then July hit and I was like, well, I'm glad I blanked 3 months of blogs because I can't finish anymore. I remember I published, I think I hit a, I published more than anything else I ever have. And I, but I got all the first drafts done by July, and then that was whoop done, you know, like yeah. I just recently published something that I meant to publish in 2017, actually. And I had to get my grad students to help me. So, sorry, 2019.
Whoopsie. Oh, 2017 yeah. was extra funny though.
Yeah. That didn't even make any sense though, cause I wasn't in prep. But yeah, there's 100%, like there's this, and I would say there's probably a biological basis for us. Like you said, Berto, like if you look at the Minnesota semi-starvation study, you see obsessive tendencies around food developing mm-hmm. in those people. They weren't bodybuilders. They didn't have yeah. obsessive tendencies. They were just trying to see what happens from starvation. So that was purely like a feed forward, feed backward effect kind of thing, a little bit of a loop. Like we get obsessive because we're trying to be accurate to get leaner, to get on stage. Like no one was actually assessing the glute striations in these semi-starved study participants, but they were doing weird shit. They had food rituals. They were getting more obsessive. And it makes sense. Like if you're starving, we need to upregulate that pattern recognition, get you food focused. Of course, we get you focused on other things. So maybe you can find that berry or that nut, but then of course you eventually just run out of energy and you get,
you cut your hand off.
Like I did. Yes. You cut your hand off or your thumb and or break into the commissary to get kicked out of the study.
Man. We didn't make that
Yeah, 2017, up. I wrote some programs, and I'm like, man, that was fire. At the same time, I also pissed some people off, too, in hindsight. I'm like, man, that was probably insensitive of me. So, yeah. You know.
What are we trying to say here, y'all?
I think we can wrap this up by helping people understand some, as we often do, we try to end with practical take-homes. When should you not compete? I would say you shouldn't compete if you're not fully drawn to it for both the process and the outcome. Not just to look a certain way, but you're excited about the journey. I think that's important. I think also another time you shouldn't compete is if you don't have your fitness life in order pre-bodybuilding. Like if you're currently unhappy with your body, bodybuilding is absolutely not where you should go. What else, guys?
Well, what you said about the process and, you know, being about that life, I think you need to have done that on a smaller scale before, you know, mm-hmm. and that have like and gradually move up. It's like, imagine if your mom signs up for boxing classes and you walk in there and it's like, why is my mom in the ring? Like slugging it out with this chick. That's not what they're ready for. So yeah, scale it up, look at your history, you know, and be honest with yourself. Like, am I ready? Cause it's a giant leap. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, like for people in my gym who I think are ready, like I think part of the reason is because it's like, man, you're so ready. Cause this is going to be so hard and draining, but at the same time, so rewarding. I think you'll like it, you know, because they have all the other criteria in everything I see. So again, it's wonderful, but it's like, know what you're getting into and make sure you have the base for it.
Yeah. I'd say the last thing or a thing where I was like, I couldn't not compete. I saw it. I wanted to do it. There was literally nothing anybody could tell me. So I knew I was going to go there. Like, it was way too fast. I talked to Chris Foss about it and he was like, maybe, yeah, there's one in like 6 months. I was like, or he said, there's one in 10 weeks and there's one in 6 months. I was like, we're doing it in 10 weeks. He's like, I don't know. And I was like, no, we're doing it. And it worked out. I got like second place in the NPC show. I didn't think I looked that great, but whatever. Like as for my personality, like there's some people like my personality wouldn't have said no. It would have been great if I had a coach, but I was going to do it. And it was one of the best things I've ever done in my life, as much shit as I've talked this whole podcast. It is, though. It was one of the coolest things, like my favorite things I've done. I'm so proud of it. It got me to you guys eventually. I learned so much. It changed my life in so many ways. But like, I think you need to be like that excited about it to where no one can talk you out of it, whether you do good or not or whatever. Because again, then it's just a failed prep, and that's like your first failed prep. You should like try to go there your first one. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that kind of goes back to what I was saying before about the double-edged sword. It's like if you're not in that place there's a big probability you won't get on stage or you won't be happy with the final product because you right. won't be able to flip that switch. You won't have the mentality of open-ended willingness to suffer to do what's necessary. But that same willingness is what also makes it so brutal. So it's that's when you know you're a lifer or at least a fully committed, however many times you competer, you know?
Yeah.
You're in, let's put it that way.
Yeah, and then, you just can't just be dancing a fence about it. Like, you really gotta...
Yeah. Yeah, it won't go well. I mean, it won't go well even if you do compete, as we talked about. But at least you can come back from that and not feel regret. You can learn from that.
When if you would have listened to this podcast, Andrea, you would have been like, I'm doing it anyways. Like, after the whole spiel we just gave, you would have been like, I'll worry about that when I get there. You know, I got stuff to do. So
yeah. So not I think proud it would of have, that. That is a part
I think
of
it would have excited you. I think you would have been like,
yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
It made me more want to do it. I'm ready for those
challenges.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know. I'm like, no, we're doing it. He's like, it's possible, but I'm like, okay, we're going to do it. We're going to lose 30 pounds in 10
weeks. Telling me there's a chance.
Exactly.
What's going on, 3DMJers? Eric Helms here. Thanks for listening to our podcast. I just want to take a second to tell you about MASS, Monthly Applications in Strength Sport. This is a monthly research review that I put out with Greg Knuckles, Dr. Mike Zerdos, and Dr. Eric Trexler. We cover the most up-to-date, peer-reviewed research in the world of strength and physique sport that's directly relevant to your practice as a coach or an athlete. We provide our reviews in written format, but also, since you enjoy our podcast, in audio roundtable reviews where we discuss the research in depth. Finally, we also do video concept reviews where we cover a broader topic in video format for your learning. For fitness professionals, you can take quizzes on MASS content and earn continuing education credits for most of the biggest certifying bodies in the fitness industry. If you want to sign up and get a subscription, head over to 3DMuscleJourney.com and click on the products tab. Thanks for your time, and thanks for listening.